Well, hello, everyone. This is John Byrne with Poets and Quants. Welcome to Business Casual, our weekly podcast with my great co-hosts, Caroline D'Arty Edwards and Maria Wick-Villa. We're going to talk about the GMAT versus the GRE. We just got the latest data on the percentages of the enrolled students in each of the major business schools who submitted a GRE versus a GMAT, or no exam at all for that matter. And once again, here's what we found. The graduate record exam is surging. It's increasing its market share yet again. We found that about half of the top 50 schools with the top 50 MBA programs reported increases in the rate of GRE submissions in 2023. And now, in fact, 53% of the latest entering class at UC Berkeley entered with a GRE. At Dartmouth Tuck, it was 42%. UT Dallas, 41. Stanford, 39. Minnesota, 39. Yale, 37. Yale has always been one of the schools that has had a high degree of GRE submitters. Duke, 37. Georgetown, 37. Wharton, 37. Michigan, 36. So while the GMAT remains the dominant standardized test for business schools, the GRE continues to gain market share at its expense. What do you make of all this, Maria?
Well, I think that GRE set its sights several years ago on trying to take that market share from GMAT, and I think they've obviously clearly succeeded. And so I think this is part of why we're now seeing GMAC reacting by launching a newer version of the GMAT test earlier this year. I think it's fascinating. I think it's wonderful that there are two different tests available, so that way you can take whichever test plays more to your strengths. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this all evolves now that we have the newer GMAT coming into play with its new scoring system and its new format, sort of throwing things into the mix. Because now we're going to have essentially three different tests that you could submit. If you took the old GMAT prior to it being decommissioned, that score will still be good for 5 years. So you could either submit that score or a GRE score or the newer GMAT score. So now we're going to have three balls to be juggled in the air simultaneously in terms
of
test taking.
Isn't it four? Because there's obviously a new shorter GRE as well.
Yes, that's true. I guess I was sort of thinking that I think the scoring scale for the GRE is this. It is a new test, but I think it's essentially the same scoring system, if
yes,
I'm not mistaken.
That's true. Exactly.
So
right.
In terms of looking at scores, like if we're talking about like, scores go up or down? But yeah, I mean, it's a dynamic market. And I think that the test companies and the schools themselves are trying to adapt to what applicants want while still maintaining high standards. And that's the delicate balance that they're trying to, the fine line that they're trying to walk.
Yeah, definitely true. And then, you know, some of the declines of the GMAT at some of the schools are pretty dramatic. Carnegie Mellon, there was a 29-point decline in the GMAT. Washington Foster, 25, Rutgers, 24, Pittsburgh, 24, Emory, 22-point decline, Rice, 19, Rochester, 18, and Ohio State, 18 percentage points year over year alone. I mean, that's quite a big drop. But Caroline, as you have said before, we've all said before, schools really don't have a preference between the GMAT or the GRE, right?
That's right. And I think it's great, as Marie said, to have two options. In the past, GMAT really had a monopoly, and monopolies aren't good. Competition is positive. So, I think that if GRE hadn't made a big push into this market, then GMAT probably wouldn't have come up with a new GMAT focus test, right? They would have plodded along with the old GMAT because they were happily milking their monopoly. And so GRE has shaken that up. So I think that it's a positive evolution that we have options. Candidates can choose the test that suits them best. And the fact that the percentage of students who've taken the GMAT has increased to pretty significant proportions, including at some of the top schools, shows that it's just as legitimate as the GMAT. The schools are absolutely happy to take it. And, you know, a lot of candidates are choosing to take that route. So, you know, it's tough for GMAC, but they had a very cozy monopoly for probably far too long.
And the other interesting thing, and I wonder how both of you think about this, do you think the most serious MBA candidates are still taking the GMAT? And I asked a question because, you know, the highest GMAT submission rates last year, Harvard was at 69%. Only one other school in the top 100 was higher than that. It was Florida at 72. Kellogg, 67. Wharton, 67. Yale, 62. Chicago, 63. Stanford, 61. These are the highest GMAT submission rates. And those schools, obviously, Harvard, Kellogg, Wharton, top three there, are among the most competitive. And Stanford, of course, is the most competitive. And yet, you know, very substantial majorities of the admitted students who are now enrolled submitted a GMAT. Do you think like the most serious, you know, A players in the B school game are still doing the GMAT?
Well, I don't know if it's that so much as one of the reasons that schools started to take the GRE is that it's a much more diverse pool of applicants, right? Because you can take the GRE for a lot of different programs, whereas GMAT is designed specifically and used just by business schools. So I think that candidates who are from traditional feeder pools and have been on a track for a while, planning to head to business school, may be more inclined to take the GMAT, and maybe there are more of those students who've been to, have worked at top investment banking firms or top consulting firms. Maybe those students are more highly represented in the classrooms at some of those top schools than schools who are perhaps more locally focused in their candidate pools. So I think it's possible, but I think it's also a factor of the diversity of the pool among GRE takers versus GMAT.
Maria, is it possible to say who has the better test at this point? Is it the shorter GRE or the shorter GMAT? And again, better for whom?
That was, you predicted my question back to you as part of your question.
I knew you were going to answer that way.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That was good. I was going to say it depends better for whom and in which context. To the extent that the GMAT was originally designed, and even the GMAT focus has now been redesigned and iterated upon specifically with the intent of measuring someone's readiness to excel in a business school classroom. That's probably, if we had to compare, that's probably the better test for business school specificity. Although, as Caroline pointed out, then the problem is that then you risk alienating people who might have been considering multiple graduate school options who took the GRE, which is sort of the general test for any type of graduate school. And then if they think, oh, well, now I have to take another test, forget it. So, it's good that both options are out there, but I do think that the GMAT is probably, because it was designed to measure someone's ability to do well in business school, I would hope that it's a better judge.
Yeah, and the plus on the new GMAT is there's more integrated reasoning math on there, which brings you closer to the emphasis on business analytics, in particular in business schools today. I guess the con about it, there are two cons: the change in the scoring, which is pretty dramatic, and psychologically it could be quite draining for an applicant until we all get used to the new scoring, where, a 740 on the old test is now equal to a 700, or a 700 is equal to 660 or so. That's a con. And then the other con, of course, is, GMAC totally took out the writing element in the standardized test. It remains in the GRE, and to the extent that AI is now being used all over the place to do writing for students and candidates, applicants, however, inferior or dense a ChatGPT response might be, it would be probably helpful for admissions directors to see a writing sample from candidates today more than any other. You agree?
Yes, I absolutely do. I think, to the extent that you can't really cheat or you, I mean, technically, I suppose you could cheat, but it's very, very difficult to cheat on the analytical writing section in a standardized test. And so that really gives you a real sense of, okay, just how good is this person's writing? Even if they're not using ChatGPT for their essays, you know, you never know if they've had, you know, an editor or a friend who was an English major, or, you know, you don't know if that's the applicant's actual writing voice. But with a standardized test, timed conditions, proctored exams, et cetera, like you can be pretty confident that that actually is how they write. So it is sort of a shame. I understand why they got rid of it, probably to be more appealing to more candidates, but I do think that it is a loss in terms of ascertaining their communication style.
Now, Caroline, why do you suppose, as someone who, you know, long required the GMAT, even before there was a real competition at NCIAD for the GRE, and if I recall properly, I think the NCIAD was a little bit later than the other schools in accepting the GRE.
Yeah.
And that was true of Chicago Booth, incidentally, more of a quanti kind of program there. But I think in NCIAD's case, it was the accelerated nature of the MBA program. So you really need to be sure and confident that an applicant could handle the quant work. But I wonder, you know, do you still think that the GMAT's the better test? And why do you think they've been losing market share?
Well, as we said, the GMAT was specifically designed for business school. And I think that the way that they've revamped the test is quite thoughtful. And they've really tried to focus on skills that are particularly relevant for business school and those academic skills that you will actually need. So I think, you know, particularly with that revamp, they have tried to make it an even better predictor, a more useful tool for admissions. And on the other hand, GRE has just shortened the test, right? They haven't changed anything about it. So that was a much easier change for GRE to make and an easier change to roll out, right? It's less intimidating for candidates because, oh, it's the same old test, but it's just a lot shorter than it used to be. Yeah. Whereas it's harder to get candidates to adapt to a new test because there's the element of the unknown. And there's also less test prep material out there, right? There was such a sort of huge history of test prep material out there for the old GMAT, and it's going to take a while for that to build up for the new GMAT focus. But, you know, I do think that they did a good job. It sounds like, you know, the new elements are more relevant. The shorter format is definitely welcome as well. So I think that from the school's perspective, GMAT has done a good job in revamping the test. But I also understand why candidates may feel nervous about going down that route when it's more of an unknown. So it may take some time, I would imagine. I think, you know, when there's change, it sort of disrupts the balance a little bit. And I think with the new test coming out, probably there will have been a greater shift towards the GRE because just the shorter test seems less intimidating than a new test from GMAT. But perhaps over time, the volume of GMAT test takers will increase a bit again because it will be less of an unknown, right? And there'll be more test prep materials out there. There'll be more certainty about how it works. People will have got used to the new scoring system, which is, you know, going to take some time for people to adapt to. So I think that it may be a little bit rocky right now for GMAT in terms of uptake of the new test, but I would imagine over time that would settle down.
Yeah. Maria, do you think next year when these numbers come out, GMAT will continue to lose market share?
Unfortunately, I do think that they are going to lose market share because of the uncertainty element, as Caroline mentioned, and also because of, I just think, again, this sort of psychological, it's irrational, you know, but humans are irrational creatures, right? It's irrational that someone should care, like, oh, I would have had a, you know, a 700 before, but now it's a 645. You know, should it matter? It shouldn't, but I think it will. I think it's, you know, just like how, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this idea. I think of, like, in the fashion world, they have, like, this idea of called, like, vanity sizing, where, like, you know, a person might be a size 12, but then the store or whatever will say, oh, it's really a size 8. So then that way the person doesn't feel like, oh, look, I'm a slimmer size. I like this brand. I feel like I've heard something about that at some point, like with fashion.
It's, no, that's, it's
like, they'll lower the number of the size. So that way, yeah, like, hey, I'm feeling pretty good. And it's almost like GMAT did the opposite. Instead of inflating if anything, you know, I understand why they moved to having a five at the end of the score. So that way you could immediately tell, okay, if the score ends in a five, I know it's a Focus edition. And if it ends in a zero, I know it's the older version. But if anything, they should have just bumped it up. They should have kept the scale the same, but just bumped it up by 5 points. So now the old 710 is now a 715. So now I'm feeling even better about myself for taking the GMAT.
Well, the vanity GMAT score. It's the anti-vanity GMAT score.
So it's like they went the other way. It is. I mean, it's really, and you know, and we've talked about how, well, the admissions officers are going to have the percentile charts right in front of them. But there was something kind of nice about the roundness of the 700 number being the previous kind of mental number that everyone used as their guidepost, as sort of a gateway. And so now, you know, even if the admissions officers themselves are completely up to speed and they've got the charts and they can do the conversions, the average person out on the street is not going to necessarily know. So if you're talking to someone an old investment banking partner who went to business school 20 years ago, and you say to them, well, I got a 645 on the GMAT, they're going to be like, whoa, what is wrong with you? Because the market at large is not going to be keeping up to speed with these nuances. Anyway, this is all this to say that I unfortunately, I don't think it's fair, but I do unfortunately fear that I think the GMAT is going to lose even more market share because of this, the vanity scoring element.
Yeah, I agree with you. And obviously, Caroline agrees with you because that's what she said just before you spoke. In GMAC's defense, I'm going to say, you know, that a lot of this is about schools wanting to use the test to differentiate among the candidates. So, a lot of the scoring is really the direct result of business school saying, hey, if you're going to design a new test, can you do it in a way that really allows us to more clearly differentiate the candidates at the upper level? Although even that request in and of itself, I find frankly annoying because again, it's putting way too much emphasis on a standardized test when you also have a transcript of 4 years of undergraduate study and a so-called holistic admissions policy that leads to selection that shouldn't put so much emphasis on the standardized test, but it does. The other thing in this story, in our examination of GMAT versus GRE, is the revelation that far fewer business schools are now allowing applicants to apply without a standardized test than in the previous 3 years. So it does look like, you know, there are exceptions, obviously, that schools wanted to reduce friction in the application process and so made the test optional or were more generous in waiving the test. But it looks like now that the pandemic is well over and it really is easy to take a test, in fact, not much time, a much shorter time to do it in, that schools are saying, you know, we kind of missed this piece assessment and we'd like to see it again. That's probably no surprise to you, Caroline, right?
Yes, I think it makes sense when schools are looking to evaluate someone's academic background, and academics are important, right? It's an academic program. I think sometimes people get too focused on showcasing professional accomplishments and all the other wonderful things that they bring to school, but at the end of the day, it's a school, right? And the top schools, they are very demanding academically. The pace is very fast, and you know, the professors want to have the brightest sparks in their classroom, so they are looking to select the best candidates academically. And it can be difficult to assess that purely on the basis of undergraduate track records, because there's such diversity in the institutions that people have attended, the courses that they've taken. And you know, especially if you're looking at an international pool, then the schools may not be so familiar with different systems and different schools that people might have attended. So it's very difficult sometimes to compare those candidates and really make a good decision. So those standardized tests are a common denominator that everyone brings, and so that can really be useful to the admissions committee when they're comparing candidates and trying to assess, you know, actually who on that academic dimension is strong enough for the program.
Yeah, definitely. So there you have it. If you are undecided about which test to take, the best advice, I think, is take a couple of practice tests, see what you're most comfortable with and where you score the best, and go for that one. Maria, that's what you advise, right?
Yes, especially in terms of the percentiles. And if you had to choose between verbal and quant, whichever one you'll do better on the quant percentile, because there are several ways to prove your verbal prowess. There's TOEFL exam, there are different English exams. If you got your undergraduate degree at an English teaching institution, if you do business primarily in the English language in your place of work, there are many ways to prove that you're good at verbal. Quant can be a little bit trickier, though, if you don't have a blatantly or overtly quantitative job. And so I would say choose the one where your percentile is probably going to be strongest, just because that's the easiest way to take apples and oranges and compare them together is the percentile.
And they are apples and oranges, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Tangerines, mutant apples. Who knows what's going to come at us next?
Oh, my. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, if you want to look at the story and see the numbers at each of the schools in terms of the percentage of admitted and enrolled students in the latest incoming classes who have taken the GMAT versus the GRE, check the story out. It's called GMAT versus GRE, which schools prefer which test and which still don't require any. So you'd also have a list of the schools that are still test optional or very generous in granting waivers. Thanks for joining us. This is John Byrne with Poets and Quants. You've been listening to Business Casual.